Revelation chapter 13 has two beasts. John saw both of them. The first was out of the sea. The second was out of the land. We're going to talk about the second beast today in the Word. Good morning and welcome back to Today in the Word. I'm so glad you have joined us and following along with us in the book of Revelation. Those of you that are joining us on our podcast, let me welcome you. And those of you that are watching on YouTube, thank you for subscribing and passing this along, and let's get the word out. We're going to pick up right in the middle of chapter 13, verse 11, down through the end of the chapter, verse 18. We're going to take a look at the second beast. So let's get right into the scriptures, the word of God, reading verse 11. Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the authority of the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed. And it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. Let's stop right there and talk about this. Because just as the beast that came up out of the sea had the image of like the dragon, now we see another creature, the second beast, in the image of the first beast, or carrying out the responsibilities of the first beast. John saw it coming up out of the land, arising from Israel. We have said the word land can be translated earth or land, like you would Palestine or the Holy Land or the Promised Land. And we know what it references because in Revelation 16 and 3, which we've not gotten there yet, and Revelation 19 and 20, which we will cover, we're told that the identity of the land beast is what's called the false prophet. And so it's symbolized here with a lamb that you would think relates to Jesus, but it's false. It has horns, and it carrying out the authority of the first beast, which gets its authority from Satan himself, the dragon. Well, you know, Jesus warned that first generation that many would come in his name saying that they were Christ and mislead them, and many false prophets would arise. It's as if Israel has become a false prophet itself, meaning the land beast exercised all the authority of the first beast that was being directed by Satan himself. David Chilton quotes Linsky in saying this. In his book called The Interpretation of St. John's Revelation, he writes, "As the first beast is the agent of the dragon, which we know as Satan, so the second beast is the agent of the first beast. All the authority makes the second beast the complete agent of the first." So you need to see this. The first beast, which is Rome, was getting all of its authority from Satan. And then the Rome was giving its means to carry out these feats to apostate Israel, which was the Jews who had rejected Christ. Now, all of this we talked through in the book of Revelation, it may be hard for us to comprehend how the Pharisees and the Talmudic teaching of that day, or even of the day, is not that which is of the Old Testament patriarchal teachings of Moses. The reason we know that is because when Jesus came to them, he said to them, "If you believed Moses, you would believe me, because Moses wrote about me." Now he states that in John chapter 5 and verse 46. He also goes on to say later on in John chapter 8, when they claimed to be of Abraham, he said, "No, you're not of Abraham," in so many words. They said, "We're not illegitimate children. We only have one father, and that's God." And Jesus told them, "If you were Abraham's children," he said, "then you would do what Abraham did. As it is, you are looking for a way to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I have heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the works of your own father." And they go, "Man, we're not illegitimate children." And he goes on to say to them, If God were your Father, you would love me, for I have come here from God. I have not come on my own. God sent me. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say. Jesus is saying that to the religious leaders, the Pharisees, of that generation, in which we now see in the book of Revelation, representing the false prophet and getting in cahoots with Rome, as they did in crucifying Jesus. He goes on to say, because you belong to your father, the devil, you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding the truth, so there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his own language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Now, the reason I read you that is because I want you to see Jesus is saying that they are demonized, that they are of their own father, the devil, in his day. And he prophesies this event before that generation would pass away. And now we're seeing it carried out. And John sees what has happened here when apostate Israel gets in agreement with Rome, who's getting its power and authority from the devil to persecute the saints. Now, we saw that in chapter 12. Just a quick panoramic view of Jesus being born and Satan, the dragon, waiting there to devour the child. But Jesus is caught up into heaven. That's the ascension. There's war in the heavens through the cross. Satan is cast down. Michael wins. But Satan, the dragon, turns and spews against the offspring and against the church. Now, God prepares a place for them. But in the midst of this, we see these calamitous things taking place during that same panoramic view. The Jewish false prophets had the appearance of a lamb. And Jesus had warned them, because of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are raving wolves. That's what Israel had become. Apostate Judaism had completely become subservient to the Roman state, carrying out their wishes. That false prophet exercised the beast authority in his presence. When we talk about they caused people to worship the emperor, they were in agreement with so much of what was going on. It was as if the nation of Israel and Rome was of the same spirit, because they were. Now let's read further. We see this. Verse 14. Because of the signs it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast, it deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast, so the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. So how did the Jewish leaders and apostate Israel come in agreement with Rome? You're going to see this not only during the days of the Gospels, but you'll see it during the time that John is writing about. Because what is taking place here, as we saw earlier in our earlier teaching in this chapter, Nero actually had set up for him an image. When it says that they caused an image to be set up, it means the spirit behind it. Where's the power coming from? It's coming from the dragon to Rome, and now the land beast or the false prophet is carrying out the desires of Rome, which is carrying out the desires of the dragon. And you'll see this over and over. The book of Acts records several instances of miracle working Jewish false prophets. In Acts chapter 8, you see Simeon, who's confronted there with the gospel through Philip and the apostles that came down, but he was doing magical arts. He wanted to be able to do those kinds of events and things. Because why? He saw the power of the Holy Spirit. And he said, I'd like to have that for myself. Well, Bar-Jesus was another one mentioned over in Acts chapter 13. He worked as a part of the Roman. He's a tenant to one of the Roman leaders. Again, you see this cohesiveness together. And as a tenant there, he was a sorcerer and he was confronted. You'll see it throughout the scriptures. So the perversity of these Jewish leaders that come in cahoots with this, they're encouraging those who live on the land, that's again, that's Palestine in Israel, to worship the image of the beast. Why? Because these religious leaders gave legitimacy to Rome, approving of their participation. Now, we know worship is more than some kind of liturgical response. It is allegiance and alliance and obedience. That's real worship. And so these Jewish leaders were encouraging them to come in line with them. So the beast was spirit-inspired, you might say. It was an image able to cause many to worship the beast. Now, the Jewish synagogues enforced the submission to the emperor. Indeed, you'll see that even in Jesus' crucifixion, how the Jewish leaders came in agreement with the Roman leaders to cause there to be a crucifixion. You remember over in John chapter 19, it says, from then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. I don't know if you remember that, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting. The Jewish leaders, again, they represent the personification of this apostasy that had rejected the Christ. And they kept shouting out, if you let this man go free, talk about Jesus, you are no friend of Caesar. They're threatening Pilate with political influence, saying your job is up for charge if you don't do this, because you're no friend of Caesar. That's the same pressure that'll be used against Christians all over the world. Persecution always comes from the political means. Oh, yeah, individuals, but the power that's in place. Rome was that power of that beast. Israel, in apostasy, had become that land beast. And so when Pilate told the Jewish leaders that, hey, you don't want me to crucify your king, do you? What did they say? We have no king but Caesar. What are they saying? We've made allegiance. We're in agreement with Caesar. There's no separation. Did you know in the crucifixion of Jesus, Luke 23 records, that day Herod and Pilate became friends, and up to that time they were enemies, because in the crucifixion they joined in their agreement to crucify Christ. Milton Terry, in his book called Biblical Apocalyptics, he writes concerning a letter of Pliny, who was a governor of Rome later after Nero, but it still shows you the spirit that was in that beast. He was a governor in Asia Minor, working for the emperor, and he writes a letter called A Letter from Pliny, P-L-I-N-Y, and in it he describes the first time he's introduced to Christians. And he says, meanwhile, in the case of those who were denounced to me as Christians, I have followed the following procedure. I interrogate them whether they were Christians. And those who confessed, I interrogated them a second and a third time, threatening them with punishment. Those who persisted, I ordered executed. Now later on, the emperor writes back and said, you did the right thing. He says, for I had no doubt that whatever the nature of their creed, stubbornness and inflexible obstinacy surely deserved to be punished. See, it was just assumed. If you don't come in agreement with the mind and the will and the things that were taking place, then you could not live. You could not buy or sell or trade, plus your life would be taken away. He goes on to say, those who cursed Christ and those who would blaspheme and those who would denounce Jesus, he said, if they did that and they would worship our gods and Caesar, we would pardon them. The Christians faced that. This is during the time that we are seeing here as well from that same spirit. So let's continue reading verse 16 and 18. Talking about this beast, it also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hands and on their foreheads. So they could not buy or sell unless they had a mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666. Interesting. The mark of the beast is a parody of what we've already seen in Revelation of God's seal on people, or his mark. God's always marked his people. And in Deuteronomy chapter 6, when he tells them that the law is to be upon their forehead and upon their hand, he very clearly, now that traditionally they actually put phylacteries on their forehead, wore the law around in a little box, but he meant in their mind, just like Paul says, that if we are not conformed to this world, he said, don't be conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might prove what is the good, acceptable, perfect will of God. Because your right hand shows your might and power, your acts. And your on your forehead is how you think and how you work. So those who are marked with God think like God and act accordingly. Those who are marked with the beast, they'd already joined in cahoots. And if you did not join in with them, you could not buy or sell or trade. That's not too unusual, even today, very minor, of course, but in countries where tyrants lead, like North Korea, Christians can't even admit they're Christians. They cannot even let people know they're Christians, because if they do, not only are they killed, but three generations of their family are killed. They have to be secret. What great faith they must have. Well, these Christians were going through something real similar. And if they bought into it, I mean, even today, if the state runs the university and you get a professor who believes the Bible and teaches the Bible and upholds what the Bible upholds, is against what the Bible's against, or for what the Bible's for, they'll be fired immediately. They can't buy, sell, or trade, even in our nation of liberty. That same dragon, that same spirit, is always used the state to persecute. Here, it's personified. So Israel has rejected Christ. And so they're marked, not by God now, but by the beast, the seal of Rome, a total lordship. They've given allegiance to Caesar and obedience to their rule. Israel has chosen to be saved by a pagan state rather than, and persecute those who would seek after Christ rather than seek Christ. When one has the mark or seal of God, they belong to God. They think like God. They act like God. And so we're not talking about a physical mark. We're not talking about one that can be seen. We're talking about what this biblical prophetic book is saying. Those who have been marked have been given themselves over, and they will worship the beast, and their names are not written in the book of life. The mark of the beast is the mark of Rome, of those who rejected Christ and persecuted the saints. The apostate Jews of Israel have sided up with Caesar and excommunicated believers out of the synagogue. There's no buying or selling. Can you imagine a Jewish person who once Jesus warned them that you'll be hated for my name's sake? Even your own families will come against you. If you were in the synagogue, you could sell and buy and trade with anyone as a Jew, but if you accepted Christ, you were excommunicated out of the synagogue, which means you could not buy or sell or trade because you did not belong to them. Now you get apostate Israel now joining with Rome, then there is no way to buy or sell or trade without the mark of the beast of Rome, because the second beast is carrying out his desires. You see, Christians who would rather be marked by God rather than be conformed to this world suffered greatly. The poor saints in Judea knew what this suffering was all about. You remember even then, they were put out of synagogues and they were poor, and Paul raised money for the church even in the earlier part of Acts. Can you imagine what's happening now, this generation, at the end of that generation, when the beast has been inspired by the dragon himself, and now apostate Israel has come in agreement with it? No wonder Paul says in 1 Corinthians, when in Ephesus I fought with the beast. He's not talking about wild animals. He's talking about principalities and powers, the motivations of those state powers coming against you. So it's clear now by the believers of John's readers that the sea beast was Rome. So he provides with them an interesting calculation for them to know his name by giving him the number of the name. He says, here's wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. Now, it may seem strange to us, but through Hebrew and Greek letters have numeric value. And it wasn't anything unusual in that day for people to calculate their own name by taking those letters, either of Hebrew or Greek, and calculating it, and sometimes using it for various reasons as identification. John pulls up on that, and he identifies the number of the beast. Now, it's interesting here how we have seen over my lifetime so many speculations. Henry Kissinger's name can spell 666. A few years ago, it was Obama. I remember John F. Kennedy's name was calculated 666. And Nixon's name was calculated 666. And I'm sure somebody has calculated Donald Trump's name is 666. It's like it's endless. And I'm sure somebody will come up with Joe Biden. Now, I like what Milton Terry says in keeping with the scriptures. He says, it's not any possible solution of the name, but rather a relevant solution is required. Having already shown that the Roman Empire as the beast as described in the first 8 verses of this chapter, we naturally look for some name that gives specific designation of that power. Now, David Chilton, in his book, Days of Vengeance, has done an extensive study on Nero Caesar, as Milton Terry has in his book on biblical apocalyptics. And it's interesting that Nero Caesar in Hebrew totals 7 letters totaling 666. Not just Nero, but Nero Caesar, because it's important. Though Nero was a personification of a beast himself, it was Rome that seized the beast coming up out of the sea. But Nero represented that during this particular time. He was a beast, literally. I mean, his reputation is still in history books. He would dress up like a beast and rape men and women. He would hang Christians on a pole and burn them and party in all kinds of debauchery parties in the light of those burning bodies. Sometimes hang individuals on the wall dressed up like a beast and go gnash upon their private parts. He killed his own mother. He kicked his wife to death. Was involved in poisonings. He was so tremendously evil, he would have personified that. It's interesting that Nero Caesar fits that during that particular time. You say, well, what about Greek? What if it's put in the Greek language? Interestingly enough, David Chilton quotes Linsky, and he writes, John writes the number in the Greek letters, and he gives those 3 Greek letters, guess what? They total 666 as well, Nero Caesar. You see, the purpose of the book of Revelation is to comfort the church in the midst of great trial as they see Rome in its power and the apostasy of Israel coming against the Jewish believers and now the Gentile believers with great persecution. Just as it looked like that is all over for Jesus on Fridays when he was crucified, on the 6th day, man being the number, 6 being the number of man, but he rose again. His death was actually the defeat of the dragon, reminding that the Christians, no matter what they saw, that the dragon would never have world dominion because Christ sat on his throne and he reigned, and he has the same promise to us today. That's why we're encouraged when we study the book of Revelation. Thank you for joining me today.